FAI may go for a short-term Kenny contract. If I was Stephen Kenny, they'd come and say, oh, we'll give you a contract for two more games. I'd be like, nope, nope. Find a new manager, lads. Off you go. Go on, find a new manager and see what happens.
OTB AM, live, weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
Okay, so Avonmore Protein Milk are teaming up with Dublin footballer Brian Fenton and Kilkenny hurler Owen Murphy to launch the new Avonmore Pro Oats product. Fenton and Murphy, who have 9 All-Ireland Championship medals between them, were representing the Gaelic Players Association, of whom, along with the GAA, Avonmore Protein Milk are a long-standing supporter. And as you can see, Brian Fenton is with us now. Brian, you're welcome back to the show. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm good on. Thanks, Minion. Thanks for having me. Your viewers are probably sick of seeing me, to be honest, but we're back again, thankfully.
I don't know about that. Like, I think this is the first time we've caught up since the summertime. How have the last few months been for you?
Yeah, very different, very different. You know, it's been a good few years prior to maybe this year for as a Dublin footballer, certainly in my career. We've been very, very fortunate and very successful. And that all came to a dramatic end this year, losing in the semi-final to Mayo, and deservedly so. But, you know, no, in many ways, no different to an off-season. You sort of use the off-season to take those opportunities to do stuff that you're not usually able to do. Trips abroad, experiences, concerts, rugby games, soccer games, you know, all of that stuff that in other worlds or in other times of the year, you probably have to forego and neglect. So in many ways, the same, but just very different in terms of the hype around the city, maybe.
So what did the off-season involve this year?
Loads, actually. So straight after the Mayo game, not straight after, about a week or so after, unplanned, sadly, I was over in Dubai, in a very hot Dubai. So went there for a week. And then since then, I've had a couple of trips. I was in London. I've been to Old Trafford in Manchester, just back from Cheltenham, feeling the effects of Cheltenham last week. So yeah, it's been great, you know. Ran into a couple of some of my mates, ran into Alex Ferguson, that sort of stuff. So just unbelievable stuff. Yeah. So a couple of trips. Was in the Aviva for the Ireland-Portugal game, fully back on the Ireland soccer bandwagon again. And just having a good time, you know. And luckily the restrictions have been lifted. So working away and living away and dealing in the background with a Mayo loss in the semi-final. Really.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But did you get chatting to Ferguson?
No, I didn't. I missed him only. So my mate, it was a twist of fate. But we were leaving one venue to go to sort of another place in the Cheltenham breakdown, and they had to stop to finish their drink. So we're about 20 or 30 seconds behind us and ran into him. And by all accounts, very, very friendly, stopped for a picture and stuff. But it's just unbelievable. You know, you run into Gordon Elliott, some of the lads met. I fell off Love Island the year previous, so like you see all sorts of people, and just a great time. You know, the week before in Old Trafford, ran into Eamon Fitzmaurice and Paul Galvin in a bar in Manchester, you know, chatting away to them, drinking away with them. So just unbelievable. In any other walk of life, you'd never run into these people, and just very, very fortunate. And just loving life at the minute.
You were saying as well that you did a skydive when you were in the Middle East.
Sorry, yes, I was in Dubai, and one of the things I've always wanted to do, you know, in many people's bucket lists is a skydive. And it was over, like, you had two options, one to do it over the desert or one to do it over the Palm in Dubai, that sort of infamous thing. Myself and my girlfriend jumped out of a plane. I was the last to go, actually, thankfully, because I don't know what I've had the stones to go if I was first, because it's just raw. I don't know if you've ever done one, but you're literally up, you're sitting on this guy's lap. Will Smith does a great talk with it on YouTube if anyone wants to look at it. But you're literally sitting on this guy's lap and you're like sort of small talking away. And then all of a sudden, like literally a door flings open and literally like in 5 second intervals, you're gone. And one of the best experiences I've ever had in life. But at the same time, if I didn't have a little video that I shared on my Instagram, I probably wouldn't remember too much of it, to be honest, because you're just so hyped out. You're completely gone. You're just like in survival mode. But unbelievable experience, and would highly recommend it and do it again and all that stuff.
Unreal. And is this something that you chase down quite a bit, that bit of a thrill? And is there like different various elements of a bucket list that, like, if it's certain itches that you have to scratch it, that you feel that you need to get moving on at this point in your life?
Yeah, I wouldn't be a massive adrenaline junkie. Like, you know, I always sort of drive within the speed limit and stuff like that. I'm not into fast cars, but like, you know, I love skiing and stuff like that. I love, for example, skydiving. I love stuff that aren't the norm, if that makes sense. You know, very, very fortunate to do that. But I wouldn't be a massive junkie. Like, I'd always sort of stay within the limits of safety. Like, you know, when I went to the skydive, for example, I was sort of overlooking their safety procedures and, and making sure all the parachutes were tucked up nicely and, you know, they were tested and stuff. But no, just sort of, you know, once in a lifetime experiences. If it crosses my path, I'll jump on it, you know.
Well, good to see you got back in one piece from that. It's interesting that you did bring up the All-Ireland semi-final there. Is that something that you're still thinking about then, or is it something that you've kind of worked through and it's kind of in the rearview mirror at this point?
Yeah, both, I would say. It was certainly in the rearview mirror. Like, you sort of compartmentalise it, park it away maybe in the aftermath, and you sort of deal with it in your own way. But as you say, we're quite quickly into club games and stuff, so that sort of takes the focus, and then you're back working and all these sort of trips away or you're going on them, and your sort of life is running away in itself. And then as the sort of conversation comes around now to being back with the team, I'm back with the lads and sort of, you know, the talk of maybe training in later December and January, then you sort of think, oh, geez, and it sort of comes right back to the top of your thought process. And I haven't, you know, there's been no review period. We haven't looked at it just yet, but that will come, and we'll have to endure the pain of that. But as I was saying earlier on this morning, as you know, I think we'll learn more from that than a victory. You know, there's no doubt about it. So we'll have to, as I said, just endure the pain of the review, but learn the lessons and hopefully bring them into our 2022 season.
What was the aftermath of that game like for you personally, given the unbelievable success that you've had and never actually tasting that feeling of defeat in championship before that night?
Yeah, it was funny. Certainly weird. In the immediate aftermath was just the dressing room. Never experienced a dressing room like that, I think. It would have been somewhat similar, maybe some of the draws that we had, just the deflation and not having maybe a cup in your dressing room, do you know that sort of way? So maybe somewhat similar in some of the draws, but just the dressing room and the emotion and the disappointment in that immediateness of the game. And then after that, I suppose it's just not being part of the final and not being part of the build-up and the hype. And, you know, what do you do on a day of a final when you're usually playing, you know, that sort of way? So, you know, you sort of have to deal with it and you have to get on with it, and no point sulking about it too much. So, only looking at the final only fuels a fire and fuels a motivation to get back there, despite, as you say, success and having been there a few times. But it does nothing but drive and inspire for next year.
I can imagine. So, a lot of what those great Kilkenny hurlers always said that losing a semi-final is much worse than losing a final. And as you say, it's not being part of that final. So what did All-Ireland final day look like for you then this year?
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful. I Lazar asked me, did I watch the game? I didn't. I was out, I'm doing up a camper van, and I was out doing nothing really, but doing bits on my camper van, painting and bits like that, and sort of dropping into the house to get things. And I'd have the eye on my housemate was looking at the final, and I sort of drop in, get the score, leave again. So very uneventful. Probably turn the phone off on that day, but caught the last 10-15 minutes of it and sort of caught the review of the game and you know, the breakdown of it. And undoubtedly Tyrone very, very deserving of their victory. A very dangerous team, it seems, looking at it over the next few years, with a great group of players and management. So just looking forward to the challenge that's going to bring. Even looking at the league, I only caught the league table there, for example, the other day. And the teams that are in Division 1 now are just such exciting games, exciting teams, offensive teams. Just dying to get back into it.
Would it be nice to have that league in the summer? I dare say the decision to do up the camper van on that particular day wasn't a coincidence, that you were trying to keep yourself busy that day.
Trying to keep myself busy would be accurate, yes. Whether it was a camper van or out walking the dog or out doing something, I would have been anywhere but in front of the TV. But you know, that's just every player deals with it differently. I know some lads watched it, some didn't, some were abroad, some had no interest in it, you know, that sort of way. So just dealing with it differently. But as I said, congratulations to Tyrone, and you know, hopefully we'll meet them or Mayo or Kerry or whoever it may be next year. Looking forward to it.
And it's going to be fascinating as well, just what that does to the psychology of this Dublin team. Because as you say there, all of a sudden there's a point to prove. There was certainly no points to prove over the last 5-6 years when you were the undisputed kings of the country. Whereas now, having that little edge, that can't be bad for this team, surely.
No, exactly. I think you've said it there, Owen. I think for a long time we were the team with the target on our back, and now we're just one of many teams that are sort of looking over their shoulders at who's coming. So for us, I think if we had, say, hypothetically, if we'd won again last year, it just would have covered over cracks that a loss and the analysis of a loss and the learnings of a loss would bring. So I think, as I said earlier, you know, a loss from our point of view was unfortunately the best outcome in terms of refreshing players, refreshing management, refreshing drive and motivation. And, you know, maybe even good for the city, you know, that sort of way. In many ways, you know, I was very lucky enough to bring Sam Maguire into my primary school for 5 or 6 years in a row. And at that stage, the kids were probably saying, well, look, you know, I see this every year, you know, and, you know, that's what's different. Just give me homework off. That's all they wanted. So so in many ways, next year will be, you know, everyone has gone a year without it. You know, it's like you always want what you can't have or what you haven't had for a long time. So, so yeah, I think it'll invigorate the city again because, you know, maybe in many ways, 2015, 16, you know, 13, the hype around the city and in clubs and in kids and in fans was huge. Whereas with success, that in many ways, you know, not to blame anyone, but that can dwindle. And I think what losing will do for the city is, you know, well, maybe the fans will be more motivated and players will be more motivated and coaches will be, you know, extra motivated to bring us back to that, hopefully. And I think we certainly still have the panel to do it. We still have the team to do it. So we're excited.
Yeah, that's really interesting, that tone of excitement. And I think you mentioned the teams in Division 1 next year. I think there's like a real sense of excitement around what football is going to bring next year. You were in the middle of it this year, like which really felt like a staging post almost in the direction the football was going, that it was just really, it was a really good brand of football so much. Like, what was your own experience of the season as a whole?
It's great. I think my first 2 years when I came in, it was all about, you know, again, no one's fault, but it was all about very tactical breaking down, maybe mass defences. You talk about maybe Tyrone semi-final 2017, for example. It was just a master tactical game. Whereas now, as you say yourself, there seems to be a return or a brand of offensive football, kicking, catching, scores, you know, keepers coming up to play corner forward, all of this madness, you know. So it's just great. It's great. You know, there's sort of an element of back to basics, and it sort of drives you on as a player as well. Say, right, you know, let's get back to our basic skills and scores, because you know, you may have those opportunities over the next couple of years to be in more open positions. But no, it's exciting, as you say, that the whole trend in football now, even hopefully and thankfully in club games, you know, I think that whole defensive model was seeping into the club scene as well. But now there's sort of a return to offensive football. What's our best product, and let's produce that. And let's sort of master it.
With every sort of development in the game, there tends to be a reaction. So what would be your specific reaction, do you think? Maybe this could be a subconscious reaction as a midfielder, because the middle third has been a war zone all summer long. I mean, the three nominees for All-Stars are traditionally, Lee Keegan, technically a cornerback, but like a halfback, and then obviously half forward for Tyrone as well. So being right in the middle of that middle third as well, how do you think you'll react to this style of football that's developing?
Yeah, it'll certainly change. And as I said, you'll see it. Like there's some defenders are outscoring their forward counterparts and their forward colleagues. And likewise, as much as they hate it, corner forwards are now back sort of one-on-one with their man, you know. So there just seems to be this constant motion around the place that'll sort of demand that you are mobile and that you're able to play almost in every position. You know, in many ways, historically, you were happy enough to stick in your zone and maybe creep forward, maybe get back to help. But now there's such fluidity that you sort of have to be a forward and you have to be a defender and you have to be good at everything. And as I said, the goalkeepers are more midfielders than anything else. You know, they're more forwards, they're more offensive threats. So it's great. It's exciting. And I think crowds love it and fans love it and pundits love it. And hopefully we'll see more of that next year.
One thing that came up this week was that Conor Glass was doing media and he said that he models his game on your good self. He said that he's been watching video of you just to get that transition from AFL back to the league here, to the championship here. Was that something you ever did at the start at all, actually modelling your game on someone? I know he's coming from a different perspective, changing sport, but it does seem that this is also a trend.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeez, I hope he learned. I don't know, did he learn much? He would have had to look at a few more after me, I'd say. No doubt a tough scenario. And you look at the likes of maybe Conor McKenna as well, coming back from international or Aussie rules and coming back. And no doubt it's a different game with different skills. And you're so long without a Gaelic football, so I'm sure a transitional period. But I've been watching him in the distance at Derry games, and he's certainly no bother to him like a duck to water again. So Yeah, no, I think, I suppose, sorry to answer your question. No, like from my own point of view, you're always trying to rob little nuggets from the best around, like, you know, the likes of Michael Murphy or the likes of Kieran Kilkenny or even David Clifford. You know, you're trying to rob little nuggets all the time and try different things in training that you've seen, but no more so than historically as a kid, who influences you? The likes of Kieran Whelan, the big badass gloves and the high fielding and big scores. And then you sort of Dara O'Shea, just refined box to box. And obviously the influence that he had on his Kerry team. So all of them, but like you could go through names forever and say, I want to be like them. I want to be like them. But probably those two names. And then obviously the modern sort of players around you to try and keep your standards high and keep pushing them and improving yourself as well.
Just one last thing then, Brian, I kind of touched on it earlier on. It would have been nice if we had this Division One in the summer. What do you think should happen over the next couple of years, just with regards to the conversation that really became a national conversation on Proposal B and on Congress? What sort of format would you like to see over the next couple of years?
You know, you lads had the first big viral one during the debate or the week of. Yeah, I don't know. And truth be told, I didn't know the ins and outs and the breakdown of this the Proposal B. I didn't know the breakdown of this sixth team would get in, whereas this first team won't, or, you know, that sort of who would qualify. But I just know, you know, I spoke about it earlier, is I know that more games are good for teams and players. And the only thing I can describe it is, as a Dublin footballer, as we've sort of spoken about, I've been lucky and fortunate to play numerous games over the years in my last, say, 6-7 year career. You know, we play league games, 7 or 8 games. You play Leinster Championship, 3, maybe 4 games. You play an All-Ireland Series, 3, maybe a replay, 4 games. So, you've loads of games. You go all year. And the downfall of teams that don't experience that maybe are sort of lose their first round, lose their back door, or maybe in the Super 8s is different. But, you know, the teams that are looking to make the jump and looking to improve, and all they're given or all they're dealt with is 2 championship games, you know, and just on the effect that has for players. Again, I spoke about this earlier, but for us as a group with Dublin, it builds friendships and camaraderie and trust and engagement, and it leaders emerge as the year goes on. Do you know what I mean? And it gives lads who might not be starting maybe that first round or second round, gives them a chance to get in as the games go on, versus a team, you know, not to give an example, like a team who might lose their first round championship and they have a set team and they're trying to build a game plan, trying to build trust, and they're doing everything right, and their dedication to Gaelic is no different to anyone else's, but they lose their first round and then they're scrambling and the pressure is on to win the second round, and they can't change their game plan, they can't change personnel, or, you know, they have to win at all costs, and then they lose again and they're out. And what happens there as players is there's a drift. There's a disconnect, you know, you're not interacting, you're not building friendships with other players from different clubs, you're not building that trust in the background that we've been very fortunate to build in Dublin or in any of the maybe bigger teams over the last few years. You know, you hear us talk about we're the best of friends, and why is that? Because we're forced to be the best of friends. We spend so much time together, you know, we spend all year together, whereas other counties don't get that opportunity. So maybe I'm not a bit off Proposal B, but I just think more games throughout a summer period or for a prolonged period or in a group setup or more games would mean that weaker teams will undoubtedly come on, because they'll have a chance to work on their game plan. They'll build a trust with the manager. They'll build a trust amongst each other. They'll, you know, lads who might not have, as I said, leaders will emerge, great players will emerge. Someone you might not have thought would be the starting 15 might come on and lord it, you know, that sort of way. And they only get those opportunities with more games. So yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I know, like, there was huge debate after it in terms of tweaking it or whatever. That's not for me, but I just to emphasise the benefit. Forget, you know, and that's not even to get into the hype that comes with games and the excitement that builds around the county who might get a run and goes to a winner-takes-all game in the last group stage or whatever it might be. Around the country, more games, you know, the hype, the excitement, fans travelling around the country and the colours and the emotion and, you know, coming home on the train and days out for fathers and sons or mothers and daughters, you know, those just the magic days of the GAA, I think, would be better served with more games and more events around the country. So maybe, I don't know, there will be a solution, there's no doubt, because I think we're all agreed, everyone has agreed that this has to change or something like that. But I just hope that, you know, it probably won't. Maybe, I'm not sure will it happen in my playing days, but I think it should happen in terms of the benefit of the players and the benefit of the teams.
God, it would be worrying if it didn't happen in your playing days. Hopefully, the system that changes over the next couple of years. Brian, great chatting to you. When is D-Day? When is that video analysis day going to be when you eventually watch Mayo back?
Yeah, whenever we get back as a team. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be the first day. There'll probably be some sort of gym testing. And then the first weekend is, I'm sure there'll be a camp and there'll be analysis, reviews, breakaway groups. There'll be a full tribunal into it. But hopefully more learnings than anything else. But yeah, look, huge excitement for next year. Can't wait for that. It's only this morning when you're talking to likes yourself. You're here in Croke Park. The kid in you again just sort of comes back. And you sort of look forward to it again, you know?
Well, very best of luck with it all, and enjoy the rest of the time off from being a footballer for now anyway. Just a reminder that Avonmore Protein Milk have teamed up with Dublin footballer Brian Fenton and Kilkenny hurler Owen Murphy to launch the new Avonmore Pro Oats product. Fenton and Murphy, who have 9 All-Irelands between them, were representing the GPA, of whom, along with the GAA, Avonmore Protein Milk are a long-standing supporter. Brian Fenton, thanks a million.
Thanks, Owen. OTB AM.